Welcome to the Benefits Executive Roundtable, hosted by Dorothy Koshu, President of Advanced Benefit Consulting. Dorothy is a nationally recognized benefits and compliance consultant and group health broker. Here, you'll listen to industry experts break down the latest news and trends in employee benefits, healthcare reform, regulations and compliance, all designed to empower executive decisions.
Welcome to the Benefits Executive Roundtable. I'm your host, Dorothy Koshu, President of Advanced Benefit Consulting. First off, I'm here today with ABC's new Director of Business Development, Sue Wakamoto Lee, who I felt may offer some valuable assistance in today's podcast. Thanks for joining me today, Sue.
Thanks, Dorothy. I couldn't miss this one. Full disclosure, our guest today is a dear friend of mine now, but many years ago, the first time I heard her speak and was intrigued, we weren't friends back then. But now we are.
That's good to hear. Well, we want to welcome her today, our guest, Elizabeth Mack of Holistic Caring, who is going to share a ton of information on alternative medicine and healing. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here, and I look forward to recording this show.
Well, we have so much to cover today, and I have so many questions for you, so we're just going to jump right on in. Let's start from the beginning. Tell us a little bit about Holistic Caring in general, and I understand that there's quite a journey it took for you to create this company after being an RN. Can you tell us who this company is, what it's all about, what's your mission?
So Holistic Caring and the Green Nurse is, I call it a double delight, right? So Holistic Caring is the online educational programs for patients and for professionals, and Green Nurse is the one-on-one coaching for patients and mentoring services for nurses. So we run them both together. I merged with Sherry a couple of years ago, and now we just have one big shop. So we run the academy to train the nurses, and then we put them to work seeing the patients either in their own practice or through our Green Nurse coaching shop. And what we do in shorthand is that we bridge the gap between conventional and cannabis medicine for people by providing the pertinent research that they need to understand about how cannabinoids might work for their condition, and then how to use them in conjunction with everything else they're doing in conventional care. On my personal evolution, I was a BSN, BA, RN since 1987, and I worked in hospitals until 1996 when I completed my MBA in healthcare administration. Then I entered insurance markets with several health plans, and my last post was the regional sales manager for Anthem Blue Cross for the County of San Diego, 1-to-100 employee benefits, so all the medical, dental, vision, life, work comp. But I left Anthem Blue Cross to do this. Once I found my own healing with CBD, I was like, I can't just keep this a secret. I have to share this with other people. And I ended up starting a company to be the nurse again so that I could do this and help others.
Okay. Well, you kind of talked about this a second ago, but I want to come back to it because I think it's important. Now, you created a connection and a synergy between medical marijuana patients, providers, and registered medical dispensaries in an attempt to ensure medical cannabis is consumed safely, responsibly, and to the highest medical benefit. Can you tell us more about that and what you do to make it more safe and provide the best possible benefit for your patients?
Yeah. So we really, you know, sometimes I'll tell people what I do is I sit down and I explain it all, because that's what people want, somebody to explain how CBD and cannabis works. And so in our one-on-one coaching, we ask them questions, and through an assessment, we determine the client's goals and objectives, just like you would on the broker side. And then we help them meet their needs in the most efficient and cost-effective way. So in normal healthcare, you have a doctor or a nurse practitioner write prescriptions, and then you send them to the pharmacy. The pharmacist tells you how to use those medications and how to stay safe with interactions and that sort of thing. And we do the same thing by connecting patients with the medicinal formulations that are going to help them accomplish their goals and objectives, right? And then we educate them on dosing, because a tincture could have a 300 milligram bottle or a 3000 milligram bottle in the same size. So that dropper could be 10 milligrams per milliliter or 100 milligrams per milliliter. And it makes a big difference to them. So we educate them on all of that and help them make adjustments until they're successful. And, you know, many patients come to us after over consuming and having a little bit of a bad experience with THC. But the problem is they've had horrible experiences in conventional care too. And a lot of them can't take the pills or get any more procedures, and they need other options. And a lot of people have cancer, and we're going to talk about that, or autism or epilepsy or ADHD. And parents come to us and say, how do I use these minor cannabinoids like CBD and CBN and CBG? And all of the other ones, there's about 130 cannabinoids in this plant, and none of them are psychoactive other than THC. But people need to know how to use them, how to interlace them, how to create a real strategy. And so from pediatrics to geriatrics, palliative care, hospice, you know, we can help people navigate to personal success, whether that is for them, no evidence of disease from a stage four cancer, or being able to die with peace and presence and not so doped up by the opioids and some of the other things that people are taking. And, you know, just to go up a level, medical cannabis is legal now in 38 states. 24 permit adult use, but there's still no clinical guidance at the dispensaries. A lot of times the dispensaries can't even talk about pain or anxiety or sleep because they're not clinicians. So there's a real chasm there. But now there's 50 million Americans, or 18% of the population, that are using cannabis, according to the NIH now. In comparison, only 11% are still smoking. So with over 70% of Americans supporting full legalization of cannabis and thinking it's benign, we're ready to go. And to really help people access and utilize this plant to their best benefit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's important information. Why is it so important to understand plant medicine in general?
Well, plant medicine has been always with us, right? You know, with the first documented case of cannabis back in 8,000 BC, right? We've been using plants. And, you know, in my opinion, God made plants that would nourish our body. Right. And we need to, the healers among us have figured out how to use them. So phytonutrients or plant nutrients are the compounds that we extract, right, from herbal medicine. And these compounds can balance the body more gently than the single molecule pharmaceuticals. And the cannabinoids are made. And so if you look at a bud, you see the trichomes, and the cannabinoids and the terpenes are what the plant makes to protect itself from UV light and insects and other pathogens. And these compounds, about 130 of them in the cannabis plant, can balance our body because they're activating receptors in our body that bring us into homeostasis or balance at the cellular level. And basically what the endocannabinoid system is, it's the master regulatory system in our body. And there's three components to the ECS, we call it for short. There's the receptors, so CB1 and CB2, and there's more receptors in our body for these cannabinoids than any other receptor in our body. And then there's the endocannabinoids, anandamide and 2-AG, that our body's making endogenously to activate these receptors. And then there's the enzymes that synthesize them from the essential fatty acids in our diet and then break them down in microseconds. And CBD, just for instance, is active at over 70 other molecular targets in our body. CBD can activate the serotonin, dopamine, mu, our opioid signaling, GABA, glutamate, TRIP, all of our sensations, etc. And so that's how we work together. But when we think about plant medicine, it's not the single molecule pharmaceutical. It's more like a warm blanket activating multiple receptors all over our body at the same time, which is why it's so critical to learn how to master the use and not fear it, but coming at it from a scientific standpoint. And you always have to bridge and merge science with practical applications and real world evidence of what patients are experiencing, because this is a brand new paradigm, and psychedelics are also coming, right? So cannabinoids and psychedelics, and I call them all plant medicines. But, you know, historically, it was hard to patent plants. And when you think about who was using plants, it was the herbalists. And sometimes the herbalists were synonymous with witches. And so it was just discarded. But you know, we're not going to discard this anymore. The train has left the station, and you can't really put plants back in now.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned this earlier, but I want to come back to it because it's so important. It's been widely reported that obviously cannabis is being used to treat things like cancer and chronic pain. What are the most important things that people should know about cannabis use for, you know, things like cancer and chronic pain?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, chronic pain is the number one indication of people coming to use cannabis clinically, right, in America. And really, what is pain? It's a signal that our body is giving us that something's wrong, that we need to tend to it. And it's really an issue of inflammation, right? When we look at pain, it's inflammation and damage from injuries. I've had 3 shoulder surgeries here. That was my impetus to find cannabis. And healing is complex, and we don't necessarily rehab very well because it takes time and effort, and we're too diverted with our work. And that leads to the chronicity in pain because people don't truly treat it well in the first place. And now 1 in 4 of us are living with chronic pain. And then medications. When we think about conventional care, you know, what are people escaping from when they're trying plant medicines? NSAIDs give them side effects, hypertension, GI bleed, stroke, kidney failure. You look at opioids, people get addicted, constipated, drowsy, dizziness. You look at muscle relaxants, of course, more drowsiness, dopiness, lack of coordination. These pills and procedures don't do anything to fix the underlying issues. And pain needs to be treated by reducing the inflammation, increasing mobility, you've heard use it or lose it, and improving nutritional tone, like with an anti-inflammatory diet that is Mediterranean in nature. And all of that is going to cause root cause healing. Now, cannabinoids, all of them, are anti-inflammatory, and they reduce the excessive cytokines in the joints and in the tissues, right? So the excessive cytokines are creating an overabundance of inflammation and leaving those pathways on. And CBD and cannabinoids can turn that down, and also THC can turn down the actual volume of pain by basically softening and dampening the signals going from the injury to the brain. And so when we use them together, they're a good 1-2 punch. And all chronic pain patients, a lot of times the mistake is they go to the dispensary, they get THC, but they're not getting the CBD. And so they're not maximizing that. And that's why we need a clinician to help them be able to do this. And my job is to help them use the CBD so that they can use small amounts of THC to their efficacy, but really to get back to that lifestyle medicine, right? So how do we use cannabis to help them move, to help them rest for deeper sleep, to heal, and then hopefully start craving better foods? On the cancer side, cancer is an emerging field for cannabis, and the NIH has got a lot of studies. There's a whole section on cannabinoids in the NIH cancer.gov. 40% of USA cancer patients are already dabbling in using CBD and cannabis medicines to reduce symptoms and tolerate their other treatments. And only about 29% are talking to their providers about it. So there, again, there's a chasm between, and it's stigma, right? But cancer is now being seen as a chronic disease. And people will battle off and on for years. They'll have to take chemotherapy, which causes nausea, vomiting, wasting from not being able to eat, and then neuropathies. Cannabinoids like CBD have proven effective at reducing all of them without compromising function, right? THC is feared because high doses will cause a high that may be uncomfortable for some. But THC, you know, is that when we think about dysphoria, a lot of clients that have cancer have dysphoria, that despair. Euphoria is the opposite of that, right? And if we can give small doses, then we can lift mood, we can lift energy, appetite, decrease pain, improve sleep, and help them laugh again, watch a movie with their family and be able to be more present. On another level, cannabinoids are being studied as anti-cancer compounds. And this is the exciting part that they're really starting to research at the NIH and the complementary medicine side of things. There's something called apoptosis, which is programmed cell death. When a cell knows it's unhealthy, it has an off switch that gets triggered by biological processes. And cancer cells lose that. Well, the cannabinoids can reprogram them to turn themselves off again. And then they can also inhibit angiogenesis, which is the blood supply that cancer cells need. So imagine a cancer cell being under siege and not getting the nutrients. Cannabinoids can do that by shutting down VEGF and the growth factors that feed those cancer cells. And it can also stop the ID1 genes from spreading that and proliferating. So that's what's being researched on the cancer side. But on the palliative side, helping somebody eat, sleep, relax, and be able to just forget their troubles for a minute, that's the other way, right? So and when I work with cancer patients, it's really twofold.
Well, Sue, you've had actually friends and family members of yours that have used cannabis products and it's helped them, correct?
Yes, and actually I'm one of them. I'm someone who, even in my later stages of life here, I have never done any kind of drugs. And so CBD, when it came along, I was a skeptic. And then years ago, up in Northern California, I heard Elizabeth speak. And more recently, a couple years ago, I heard her speak again. And by that time, I had come to my wit's end, taking medications, still not feeling well, my skin still not healing, things like that. And I talked to Elizabeth and Sherry. They had some of their products that they were displaying and explaining their use. And they recommended one thing for me, just one thing. And it was at a conference, and by the third day of the conference, I was already feeling better. And I ran to tell Elizabeth, this isn't a coincidence, right? I feel better. And my body just loved this small amount. I was taking one small dropperful of a tincture every morning, and it completely changed my gut health. I'm able to eat better. I feel better. So I was completely floored. And then my husband, who was also a CBD skeptic, now I've got him on a regular regimen, again, recommended by Elizabeth and Cherry. And he now is a believer. I've got other family members, including my daughter, that are now also regularly taking or utilizing a CBD product, whether it's for pain, like a cream or a tincture or a soft gel. And we are all feeling much better. So I owe so much to Elizabeth. I feel much better, and I owe it so much to her.
So getting your life back. And you know, what she took is a CBD-CBG combination with some coriander, cumin, and fennel for digestive health. And that heals the microbiome, which sets off a cascade of other healing things. So everything is possible.
Yeah. Well, people like me, and Sue, you mentioned this as well, I'm completely anti-drug in general. And I won't use anything that makes me feel out of control or high or anything like that. And of course, there is that stigma that you mentioned about it. Is there a danger of addiction? I get this question a lot. And can you talk about the differences in CBD and THC in general? I know you mentioned this microdosing, but can you explain this a little bit better for those that may not be familiar with this?
Absolutely. So many people are THC phobic, and I can't tell you how many times I've sat down with seniors that said, I don't want to smoke anything, I'm not going to be high, and I don't want to get addicted. I'm very worried about getting addicted. And it's, we're going to use low potency oils, you're not going to be addicted, and we're going to do this right. But after 100 years of prohibition, starting in the 20s and then 1937, with the Marijuana Tax Act, we lost access to this. It was taxed out of existence. The AMA protested it because cannabinoids were used in pharmaceutical uses for many different conditions. In fact, doctors call this pleiotropic, affecting many different physiologies all at the same time. But there's a huge stigma still, and it's fading because people are now experiencing and understanding CBD, CBG, CBN, THCV, CBDA, THCA, all of these initials are the cannabinoids that are found in the plant that are non-psychoactive, and they all can usher in healing. You don't have to be high ever. Now, however, THC is useful in low doses, and tolerance can build so that users can slowly increase from 1 milligram to 2 milligrams to 3 milligrams to address their needs without impairment, right? Because nobody wants to be high unless you do want to be high, and that's a whole nother concept. But of all the plant compounds, THC is the only one that will cause changes to perceptions, your moods, your memory, your motor functions, your coordination. It can cause some anxiety at high doses. It can cause tachycardia or a fast heart rate. But the other ones are just like taking vitamins and supplements, right? As far as addiction, THC can be addictive because it impacts the dopamine systems, right? The dopamine, that reward system, it feels good. I want to do this again. It develops craving in some people. And a lot of times we're looking at what is the other psychological imbalance, right? Not only about 10% of users develop what we call cannabis use disorder. And that is where people use more than intended and they cannot stop, even though they have other consequences. But we have to put this in perspective because a lot of people are substituting from other drugs. They're from pharmaceuticals. They're healing from conditions. So a lot of times people are getting diagnosed with cannabis use disorder because they're using it all the time as a medicine. And that's not it. And then also, they're replacing other drugs, substances, and alcohol. And a lot of people are using this as a harm reduction manner. So it can be a net positive. So everything has to be personalized and individualized. With respect to microdosing is using very low doses to accomplish specific goals, generally decreasing pain and anxiety so you can function better, but not to be impaired. So, and THC, but people are also doing this with mushrooms and other things. And that's contrary to people that are going to sit down and take a bunch of bong hits to purposely get high. It's a completely different thing. And that's not what we teach. But the key is to controlling the experience to make it work for you and dose every few hours with just a couple of milligrams to keep some cannabinoids in the system to heal, but not be compromised. And then we have to look at pharmacokinetics, and this is what the body does to the drug, right? Pharmacodynamics are what the drug does to the body, what receptor targets does it activate, and then pharmacokinetics, how do we absorb and metabolize and excrete and distribute this drug? And all of these products work differently, which is why it helps to have a clinician, because vaping, you know, it's in and out within a few minutes, if a couple hours. And then a tincture is about 4 hours, 6 hours. Capsules and edibles can be 6 to 8 hours, depending on dosing. Topicals are just surface area. They all work differently. And so we can microdose our way to health once we understand these products and their utility.
Yeah, and it sounds to me like that would be why the education side of your business is so important as well. Well, I understand CBD and THC might help slow down the progression of things like Parkinson's and MS. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Sure. So Parkinson's, MS, dementias, all of these have one thing in common, and what we call is neurodegeneration, where our nervous system is slowly dying, losing its functionality and not working right. And, you know, as aging happens, it's kind of inevitable for most of us, although lifestyle medicine can really help stave that off as much as possible. In movement disorders like Parkinson's and MS, there's a breakdown in the neurochemistry and signaling between the nervous system and the immune system, and a lot of this is tied to inflammation. Cannabinoids are anti-inflammatory, and they preserve nerve cells through neuroprotection and repair the signaling errors, because a lot of times signaling errors are just poor transmission, and it's because we're deficient in our messaging system. So cannabinoids can fill the gap and help people with that. And so we might be able to slow tremors from excessive glutamate. A lot of other Parkinson's patients are using it for rigidity in their spine, depression, cognitive brain fog, and then sleep, right? That's huge. And then MS, there's losses of feeling and sensations. There's problems with mobility, loss of vision, incontinence, depression, and poor sleep. And again, just like with Parkinson's, it's the same route. Except in Europe, they developed a medication called Sativax, which I'd like to talk about. Sativax is a one-to-one CBD THC oil. And so it has about a dose is 2.5 milligrams CBD, 2.5 THC in one dropper. And this is approved in 30 different countries for MS spasticities specifically, but it also has efficacy in all those other comorbidities with sleep, depression, and helping with mobility. And it has about a 55% efficacy, which is beating any of the placebos and even the drugs that are developed for these biologics and MS. And they're very expensive. So, you know, a good one-to-one oil can replace that. And while Sativax is not yet approved in America, it's in phase three in the FDA. Trials, but we can get one-to-one oil in any dispensary now, so patients can try, but that is a little bit of a strong starting point. So we can also, you know, take other ratios, and I'll explain ratios in a little bit, but essentially the proportionality between CBD and THC, but it can help everybody.
Well, we talked about the uses for cancer, for chronic pain, mm-hmm. for Parkinson's, and for MS. Let's talk about Alzheimer's and dementia. What are the uses here?
Well, as CBD is neuroprotectant and antioxidant, and most of the time we're talking CBD, because that's really, especially with Alzheimer's and dementias, that's where the starting point is, CBD, CBG, CBN, all of the non-psychoactives. But and all of them can slow down nerve cell death because of that neuroprotection. In fact, the U.S. government took a patent out in 2003 as cannabinoids are neuroprotectant antioxidants. And that means that they preserve that cell vitality from oxidative stress, like rusting, right? So we have ROS, and it's frying out nerve cells. Cannabinoids can help preserve them so that they don't disarray. And it can also stimulate serotonin, calming agitation, anxiety, and helping sleep and helping mood, right? Because our serotonin is our feel-good neurotransmitter, and we want to use that, and CBD can directly activate that. Now, THC is also very interesting for dementia, because what we're finding is that THC activates both CB1 and CB2 receptors directly. CBD does not. It's a partial antagonist. It's an allosteric modulator, kind of fancy terms. It actually, when CBD and THC play together, CBD somewhat blocks that receptor, so THC can't lock on quite so much. But it still does, and it's effective. It just changes it to decrease the psychoactivity. So when we pull in THC, now we can directly activate CB2 receptors on the microglial cells. Microglial cells in the brain can help preserve those functions by cleaning up beta amyloid plaques, because there's a compensatory mechanism in our brain to clean up these plaques. But because our ECS is deficient, because we're not taking in the nutrients necessarily to have a good endocannabinoid system tone, we're declining, right? So that's part of the aging and part of the decline with Alzheimer's. And if THC can stimulate, and they've studied this at the Salk Institute down in San Diego, literally probably back in 2005, had proof of THC being able to strip away those beta amyloid plaques and erode them from the brain. Now, the other thing THC does is it inhibits acetylcholinesterase. Acetylcholinesterase is the enzyme that breaks down acetylcholine. Acetylcholine is needed for our memory and our cognition and our functioning. So acetylcholine can then be preserved, which is going to help us think and have better memories and stave off that progression of Alzheimer's as well. So again, THC can be useful. And what we want to do is use these ratios, right? So personalization is needed because every endocannabinoid system is varying and people need different things. Coincidentally, we submitted a grant proposal to the American Nursing Association last fall for an innovation grant. And they have these nurses that are trying to innovate new standards of practice and improving care for patients. And we have this coordinator project, the CBD project, at a nursing home where we have a nurse in Massachusetts in pocket. And we're trying to get cannabinoids into that home and trying to help them to not have antipsychotics and sedatives, which is really stripping away their quality of life. And on a personal note, my mother had dementia for several years before she died of pancreatic cancer in 2022. And I was treating her for her back because she also had degenerative disc disease in her back and she was always complaining of incredible pain. So I got a 10-to-1 oil in the morning to give her daytime energy and a 1-to-1 oil in the evening to help treat the pain and help her sleep. And I do believe that that helped her mind and her memory quite a bit, because the dementia really didn't get really, really bad until she got the cancer. And then they started putting her on oxycodone and everything went out the window and she got worse. And one more thing on dementia, you know, we call it type 3 diabetes, right? And it really is a metabolic disorder. And cannabinoids can help with metabolism as well. And this is one of the lectures that I love to give because people want to know, how do they speed up their metabolism? How do they right the ship, lose weight, have better insulin sensitivity, and for things to work better? And cannabinoids can do that. So there's a multifaceted, a multimodal approach on all of these conditions. But because of the pleiotropic nature, right? If you put cannabinoids into my body, when it gets into the systemic circulation, they're going to go all over looking for receptors that are saying, hey, I need some activation here because I don't have any endogenous endocannabinoids that are doing the job. And then the phytocannabinoids mimic the endocannabinoids, plug into that cell, and then right the ship on balancing back to homeostasis, whatever that cell is. It could be a brain cell, a shoulder, a muscle cell, any of these different cells. All of our cells have ECS receptors on them. And when we activate them, it brings us back into balance in so many different ways, whether it's cancer, pain, dementia, all of them. It's uncanny, but we're just scratching the surface on this.
Yeah. And it's also, I'm hearing it being used for mental health, autism, epilepsy, and autoimmune diseases. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, you know, returning to the nexus of neurological, immune, endocrine, and behavioral, right? That's when we're talking about autism, especially. But in epilepsy, there is an FDA-approved version of CBD. It's called Epidiolex, and that can help repair the erroneous signaling. Epidiolex is purified CBD, and if we go back to around 2013, you might remember Charlotte Figge here in America. A little girl in Colorado that was having 300 seizures a week, and they created something called Charlotte's Web for her. Charlotte's Web then was this big strain, and Sanjay Gupta chronicled all of this on CNN, and you can go to Weed. This was the original Weed. Then there's Weed 2, Weed 3. There's all the way to Weed 7 now, which is all about seniors. But Weed 1 was all about seizures and how it balances this neurochemistry, because if you're deficient in something, say you're deficient in vitamin D. Now we give you vitamin D, bring you back up to level. Your immune system's working better. You have more energy. You have function. You're sleeping. Everything feels better, right? It's the same thing. If you have no endocannabinoids that are being produced endogenously, you have to supplement. And that is what these kids with these refractory seizure conditions have, because every time they start using CBD, the seizures dissipate and they're able to repair quality of life and stop having seizures. that is damaging their brain, damaging everything, and putting them on antipsychotics and other things that don't work. And a lot of these anti-seizure medicines don't work. And, you know, the efficacy on those is 30%. Epidiolex has 60% efficacy. The problem is that it's about $3,000 a month, whereas you can get a good bottle of CBD for maybe $100 to $150 in about that potency. But anyway, autism responds to different protocols. And what we need to do is guide individualized dosing with CBD, CBG, CBN are the main ones. Then we'll look at the acidic versions of THC and CBD, the acids. And then finally, THC depending, right? So there's a step therapy on how you approach to THC with youth, but they also need it. But what I do with autism is create a toolkit of different formulations and then different products. Same thing with autoimmune conditions. They all need this because autoimmune, you mentioned, it's all about signaling errors, again, and inflammatory pathways. And what we need to do is quiet the inflammation so that the body stops attacking itself. Many of the big biological medicines are trying to do the same thing by suppressing the immune system. And CBD can do that in a much more balanced and healthy way.
Yeah, I have several clients actually that are ABA providers, applied behavioral analysis providers, that work with a lot of kids with autism. So that's why one of the reasons I wanted to ask you about that as well. So you take the approach of holistic wellness. What does that mean? Tell our listeners about that.
Well, I named my company Holistic Caring because that's what we do. We care holistically, and we're really bridging the gap between traditional and cannabis and lifestyle medicine, right? And holistic really looks at the whole person, right? Body, mind, spirits, the biopsychosocial, spiritual. Allopathic medicine looks at us in parts, not seeing the dependencies. And if you read some of Dr. Gabor Mate's work, I don't know if you've heard of him, but when the body says no, or the body keeps the score, really that body-mind connection, holistic medicine looks at everything as interconnected and realizes that the physical body responds to our stressful thoughts, and then that then has a cascade of effects. And what we want to do is help establish homeostasis and peace in all of our different dynamics. And what I try and do is bring in the four pillars of health to reclaim well-being. And if you heard Anoop Kumar speak last year at LAHU, you'll understand rest, nutrition, connection, and movement are what keeps us healthy. And so I teach people how to use cannabinoids to accomplish those four health pillars so that eventually their body can heal and they can also titrate away from the cannabinoids, although most people do need a little bit of a base CBD for life because that keeps their endocannabinoid system tone working so that they can do the movement, so that they can rest, so that they can get better sleep, so that they can limit their social anxiety and speak up and connect and set boundaries and that sort of thing that is really healthy, right? So when we talk about holistic, it's not just take this pill and you're going to feel better. It's a lot of different work.
Right, right. So we've covered a lot of the common uses. I want to talk about the types of treatments and health plans and healthcare in general. You told me before when we spoke that you feel that healthcare in America is broken. You know, how and why do you feel this way?
Well, gosh, I've been in medicine 40 years since I was 17, and we've always talked about patient-centered care, but really never delivered it. I was a nurse, I was an administrator, I was a sales executive, and I was a patient, and it's really not improved. Currently, according to McKinsey reports, about 35% of nurses are planning to leave within the next year because of, you know, unmanageable workloads and just disease within their work. Medical bills are the number one causes of bankruptcy, and chronic diseases are robbing our life expectancy. And the USA is placing last in outcomes despite spending $4.5 trillion in healthcare costs. There's a better way of patient empowerment, and I believe that personalized, guided, professional use of cannabis products can heal us as a nation over time. I would love to put CBD in the water of all of the towns and see if we can really bridge that gap and help start repairing some of these conditions that have become chronic. And one of the things that I'd like to point out is I mentioned the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937. And at that point, they started to notice neurodegenerative diseases ticking up. They noticed Parkinson's. They noticed autism. They noticed other things that were starting to happen because they took hemp out of the food supply that they were grazing animals on when they eradicated it from the whole system back in 1937. And what happened was by 1939, we started to get these conditions. And it's because we're not meeting our nutraceutical needs for cannabinoids because they are such an important nutrient. And so, you know, it really is just a matter of time. But I also talk about health 3.0, right? Health 1.0 is getting rid of pandemics and, you know, 1918 or early surgeries, pain management, et cetera. Health 2.0 is all of these imaging and very expensive equipments and really putting in the systems to manage care. And then health 3.0 is returning it to the community, returning it to the people and connecting services and all of the alternative providers like chiropractic, acupuncture, naturopaths, and using a whole holistic approach, right? And that's what I think we need to start innovating towards. And I think we're getting there in Health 3.0.
Well, I have a client that asked me to ask you a question. Can cannabis be an effective prescription and a more cost-effective one? Because it's not cheap, especially if health plans aren't covering it. So I'm passing on this question from our client. What do you think?
Yeah, so there, it's not cheap. Unfortunately, a lot of times I'll tell people, you know, you gotta budget about $150 a month to make this option worthwhile, because that's about what you need in a couple of different products. And I always talk about stacking. People need a tincture, they need a capsule, they need a topical, some need a vape, you know, some need a patch, etc. Some need suppositories. You know, but anyway, all of these things add up, and health plans today are not covering it. But I do believe that they will soon. A couple of things on the federal side. The HHS has written to the DEA back in last August, at the end of August, to reschedule cannabis as a Schedule 3. And I don't know how much you know about that, but Schedule 3 would then slate it next to Marinol, which is synthetic THC, or dronabinol is the brand name, and then also Tylenol, codeine, and steroids. That's in Schedule 3. So it might do that. Of course, there's a lot of senators that are pushing for descheduling, which would then just take it out of the Controlled Substance Act completely. But this would then, in election year, you know, we think that this is going to happen in 2024 because the time really is right. And polling is showing that 11% increase in Biden favorability if he does this before the election. Currently, cannabis is in Schedule 1. Schedule 1 means no medical benefits, highly addictive, dangerous, and even in professional settings. But it obviously doesn't belong in Schedule 1 because it has enormous benefits, which both HHS and the FDA now is backing them up and saying, yes, let's reschedule this so that we can do the research and prove all of this that we've been getting. You know, and obviously, you know, it with the low addiction rates and the data from 38 states, we know that no one is dying. Once cannabis is rescheduled and the FDA starts approving versions of it, what we'll have is GMP products, right? So there'll be tinctures, there'll be topicals, there'll even be flower because I worked with Australians for about a year and a half, and they are exporting GMP flower that people can grind up and vaporize and use that way as well. But most of them will be the biopharma pathways where people can take sublingual tablets that dissolve under their tongue to administer the cannabinoids and other dose forms that they will be able to have. And, you know, going back to Epidiolex being $3,000 a month versus the same, and it's 3,000 milligrams, right? We can get a 3,000 milligram CBD tincture for $100, $150 versus 3,000. So when we look at wanting GMP, yes, we do want those FDA-approved pharmaceuticals, but do we really want to spend that money? Can we have a system with both? And that's why, you know, for me, I hope to lead these industries because I've been, you know, deeply in healthcare, deeply in insurance, and deeply in cannabis now the past decade. And I believe in creating these sensible benefit structures that are going to work for everyone. And cannabis is also starting to be an opt-in benefit. There's a company that I'm working with, the American Council of Cannabis Medicine, also another company called Benevis Health. They are bringing cannabis into healthcare. And the first example is Work Comp. Work Comp is approaching this on a step therapy, giving people access to this for things that don't work. And then Canada has a benefit. They're running it through HSAs with like a $5,000 donation from employers sometimes. The veterans with PTSD in Canada are getting this funded up to, I think, 3 grams a day. So there are innovative ways forward. And what we need to do is deschedule or reschedule, and then we can start here in America.
We've talked before, when we spoke the last time, you talked about the four Ds and how they can stand in the way. Can you walk the audience through that for us?
Yeah. So the four D's are why holistic caring and the green nurse are so needed, right? The disconnect between providers, patients, and the dispensaries. There's nobody sharing information like they do between doctors and pharmacists and patients, right? We know how that's supposed to work, but it's disconnected in cannabis. Distrust between patients, this new industry, the products, and the people that are in it. You know, there's people don't want to go to Snoop Dogg for healthcare, right? There's a big distrust in there. Disorganization. With all of these 38 legal states, we have a patchwork of laws and no federal cohesion. People go from one state to the other state. There's different rules, different qualifying conditions, different potency limits, different, you know, possession limits, etc. All of this is very different, and we need something that is put together right. And then dosing needs to be guided by clinicians with personalized effects and instruction. And that's how patients are going to be successful.
Well, thank you very much. You also have a four P's of progress via holistic caring. Can you explain that to us?
Well, yeah, this is what we do. So the first P is professionalization, right? Integrating process and protocols into healthcare. They are clueless on how to use this as medicine. So professionalization. Second is provider training. Mentoring for doctors, nurses, healthcare professionals so that they can participate. Third is products. We need vetted products that have quality standards. USDA organic, GMP is as able, but standardized, consistent, and reliable. If I find something that works, how can I be assured that I can go back to that dispensary and find it again? Because that is a problem in this industry. And so we need products that can stay and really do this. And then patients need that personalized dosing guidance and care by clinicians to really bridge that gap.
Well, most health plans don't cover CBD, or if they do, it's following an exhaustive approval process. How and when can plan participants get the use of CBD covered in their health plans?
Well, there are carriers that are willing to try this already. So I mentioned a couple of the partners that I'm working with. They're working on approving a cannabis savings card, a Canna card and Canna scripts that then they can take to the dispensaries and use in a cashless system at participating dispensaries. And then they're contracting with these dispensaries to create this network. So stay tuned for more on that. It's not fully working yet, but tomorrow morning at 9, I've got another meeting with our partners and we're developing this. But the idea is to have these HSA cards. And I mentioned work comp offering it through a step therapy for injured workers where other measures fail. And just think about the opioids that some of these people are on for accidents that happen on the job. Who wants them on opioids for long term? People can't function that way. Cannabinoids are a much better option. The one thing that we need to do is start getting CPT codes issued. And I'd love to work with any insurance partners to help me do this. I know exactly what we do in our counseling sessions. We need it for the endocannabinoid system counseling. People need instruction on how to use that, and it has to be clinicians. I was on the board of the American Cannabis Nurses Association for 4 years and served as treasurer. Now we have nurses that are doing this. And really, this is going to be the game changing because the American Cannabis Nursing Association designated cannabis nursing as a specialty. So now all 5 million nurses can step up and say, hey, I want to get trained in this. And, you know, our training programs will cover that. But we have to get nurses trained so that we can do this counseling. And then we have to develop the reimbursements because, you know, access and affordability are always what we're battling, right? You know, we got 38 states now with dispensaries, but we don't have affordability when people go to the, you know, to the dispensary and they can't afford what they want. People walk in there with $30 in their pocket and they need a $100 tincture. That's not going to work. And so in order to mainstream this, we need to have treatments covered because they can be expensive. And we have to start documenting the savings so that more carriers will start covering this. We have to prove the efficacy and the cost savings.
Yeah, well, let's talk about an option for self-funded health plans. Is there a way to offer these products and services in a health plan that's self-funded, particularly if it could save them some overall costs in the long run?
Yes. I think self-funded plans are really the first way in, other than like association discount cards, right? So self-funded plans have the ability to steer care by getting creative, right? That's what they do. And CBD can then be given through nurse coaching programs where the four pillars of health are taught to the employees, the patients, along with giving them high-quality CBD products in tinctures and capsules. So then we can pull in app tracking where they can start measuring the efficacy to have that subjective changes, biometric changes to measure objective improvements, like our Fitbit and measuring sleep and our heart rate variability. And then the nurses can then document and coordinate this cost-effective delivery of the CBD and then record it all. So again, I mentioned that nurses are the missing link, but you know, we're the educators, the healers, and the guides. And I can't wait to really do this where we can pull that in. You know, and I'll tell you an example about that soon. But you know, you can bake in the cost of the CBD with the coaching to get creative, and that's how it's been done before.
Yeah, and as you know, I do a lot of self-funded health plans. We have a lot of clients that do that, and that's why I wanted to make sure to cover that today in this discussion. Self-funded health plans obviously would need things like plan amendments, which you and I've talked about, an approval from their stop-loss carriers, and a confidence that this would save money in treatment plans over the long run. What type of research, reports, et cetera, would be available, do you think, to the self-funded marketplace or to others that they could provide to their stop-loss carriers, for example, to be able to cover these costs in their health plan?
Well, we need to move towards statistically validated scales and surveys that we're doing with patients, but then also tracking pharmaceuticals that are no longer needed, procedures that are no longer needed, drugs that are no longer needed, et cetera. So my dear friend and colleague, Dr. Philip Blair, who I've been working with the past couple of years, he independently saved one company over $537,000 in 1 year. He had a plan design where 36 members had a self-funded plan with about 500 lives. They had chronic inflammatory conditions, arthritis, diabetes, psoriasis, liver disease, and cancer. They offered CBD and nurse health coaching for a period of 1 year, and the CBD was embedded in the cost of the coaching. 26 members finished the program with 30 positive clinical events. 34 pharmaceuticals were reduced or discontinued. The biologics, the DMARDS, saved $301,000 in this group. The inpatient hospitalizations that were avoided saved $42,000. Procedures, another $138,000 that were avoided. Other drugs that were discontinued, about $53,000. And then the grand total of $537,000. And so I'd love to share, you know, some of the documentation on that and then prove something else going forward, because now it really is about lining things up and going forward and doing this over again with the assets that we have now, which have improved over, say 5 years ago when Philip last did that.
Yeah. Those are some impressive numbers, though. So I hope that you guys keep up that research, keep up this training and so forth, so that we can potentially add these products and services to self-funded health plans. Because I think you're right. I think over the long run, this would be good for the plans overall. We just have to get to that point, right? We have to go through the steps it takes to get to the point where it becomes common, where stop-loss carriers aren't going to fight it, where you know people are going to accept it more in the marketplace and so forth. But main thing is that self-funded plans want to make sure that if they're covering these claims, because it's basically a substitution for other types of more expensive care, that the health plan can cover it legally and that the stop-loss carriers will reimburse for it. So those are obviously important factors for a self-funded health plan to think about and consider before they would start doing this, offering these types of services. So what's the biggest takeaway that you want to share with our listeners today about holistic caring and the use of CBD, et cetera?
So we mentioned the plans, but just always remember the patients, right? Because we want to improve quality of life, right? And CBD and cannabis medicines are really here to stay. I said the train has left the station, the horse is out of the barn. People want this. And I mentioned the 50 million Americans that are already using it. So it's time to look at plants as our heroes and to try something new by trying something very, very old. Plants have always been with us, especially this one. We can live our best lives when our bodies are balanced in body, mind, and spirit. And cannabinoids are one of the perfect tools to help us get to lifestyle medicine. And it really is just training people about product choices, dosing, and how to optimize the treatment plan on a daily basis. Cannabis does have to be rescheduled, right? We have to get it out of Schedule 1 or descheduled completely. But Holistic Caring and the Green Nurse are here in conjunction with Bloom Hemp, our USDA organic CBD company, to consult and partner with the plans, the brokers, and the patients to really improve quality of life, reduce symptoms, and help people get back to truly living and thriving. And we need to train America's 5 million nurses. So right? The ANA designated cannabis nursing a specialty. They're creating a board certification exam. We have the comprehensive curriculum and the mentoring program with 30 hours of CEUs for nurses, because that is the first step. Once we get some nurses trained, then we can start really getting the counselors out there that the patients need, connecting them with dispensaries, right? Every MSO, multi-state operator, like Curaleaf and Trulieve and all of these big players, they need to have nurses on staff working with the health plan disease management and connecting the dots in there. And so I have a dream also for cannabis 3.0, right? So health 3.0, I've already explained. Cannabis 3.0, cannabis 1.0 is when we had all of this underground market, or you can go back to 8,000 BC. But let's just start with 1996 in California, where we brought it back through Prop 215. Cannabis 2.0, is all of the so many states, right? So 38 medical, 28, 24 adult use. And really what 2.0 has been focusing on is consumption lounges, social equity programs to repair the war on drugs and the harms that we've done to people across communities in America. And cannabis 3.0 is truly getting community together with healthcare and really building what I call the medical door. When we have the medical door, people will be able to go into a dispensary truly through a different door, because the older people that are my patients don't want to go in the same door as the Snoop Dogs. And so we need two doors where we have educational counseling and one-on-one rooms where dispensaries have private coaching led by nurses, small groups on Saturday morning talking about how to use it for cancer, where you've got a dozen people in that room. That's what my cannabis 3.0 is, and I'm merging it with health 3.0. And that's what we're trying to do. So it's this is my life work, if you can't tell.
Yeah, no, I can't believe we're able to cover all the stuff we were able to cover in such a short amount of time. Thankfully, you're as passionate about this as I am about the stuff I do, and you talk fast like I do, so yeah. We could get through the stuff that I didn't think we'd get through all of it. But I am afraid that we're out of time today. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Yeah, and thank you for the opportunity to educate and enlighten you. And please contact us for your thoughts, insights, or invitations on how to take this into your business and your lives tomorrow. And if you'd like to connect with us, my website is holisticcaring.com and then info@holisticcaring.com. There's two C's in there, holisticcaring.com. And you can see patient tabs, professional tabs, there's programs, there's counseling and coaching services from pediatrics to geriatrics and everything there. And then our CBD company is Bloom Hemp. So info@bloomhemp.com. You can contact us and ask us questions. And if you visit the website, we have a free intake form where anybody can fill out just about 10 questions, a basic health assessment on, you know, who you are, what you're treating, and what you need. And then you submit that. And then we're going to send you back a free email care plan with a few product tips that are all CBD and other minor cannabinoids, with some lifestyle tips on how you can get started easily.
Well, thank you very much, Elizabeth. And thanks, Sue, also to you for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks, Dorothy. Thank you, Elizabeth. Give my love to Sherry, please.
I will. Thank you so much for the introduction, Sue, to Dorothy, and God bless you all.
Thank you. And to everybody else out there listening, please stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned for the next episode of the Benefits Executive Roundtable. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for compliance tips, cost containment ideas, new trends, and decision-making tools. This podcast is produced by Advanced Benefit Consulting, Anaheim, California. All views expressed are those of the host or interviewees and not necessarily those of Advanced Benefit Consulting. Information contained herein should not be construed as legal advice. We always recommend that you consult with your legal counsel, as situations do vary. Ms. Koshu can be reached at 714-693-9754 extension 3. Toll free at 866-658-3835. Or visit our website at advancedbenefitconsulting.com.